If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Welcome back to Crimson Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mr. E.
I am J Clone 88014.
And today I'm going to talk as fast as possible. All we're going to talk about is how lies happen and how lies are to you every day and lies you experience.
So just like life.
Perceived reality.
Life as we know it.
No, so we're going to talk all about the eyes and the brain and how they lie to you and how we actually perceive reality.
Mm.
And then we're going to, towards the tail end of it, we'll get into the how that falls into the paranormal. Because this was a request by several different listeners of, because we've talked about it several times, everything from the duck experiment, but they really wanted to deep dive into this.
Okay.
I'm not sure if this will be two parts or not. And I know we are coming up to the season finale for everybody at home. We'll probably stretch this season out a couple extra episodes, like a couple extra weeks, and get into the season finale. It will be another big one. But yeah, just with how things are falling with the move and everything like that, we need a little bit of extra time for the season finale. And then for that, when that happens, DW Conspiracy Shack will be taking a break during that time.
What?
And Freaky Fauna Friday will be taking a break during that time.
Those are the two hottest shows on the network.
But we need the studio space.
Yeah?
Because we're going to record. It's going to be like 14 or 15 hours.
For what?
The season finale.
What? 14, 15 hours?
Yes.
Why?
Because.
That's dangerous.
And risky, but of interest and free.
Of what?
It's dangerous and risky, but of interest and free.
But of interest and free.
Adventurous. Adventurous. Put but on adventurous. Your other headphone.
I hear you. I didn't understand. But now I do. My other headphone.
You're only wearing half.
I know, but this is easier. And it hurt. They hurt my ears. My ears stick out.
You could buy new headphones.
Yeah, I know, but you know what? It's just fun. Using what you got. Making the best of it.
But you got a lot of stuff to promote. Are you ready?
Yeah, Arkansas Cryptid Fest. Coming soon, June 6th. And North Little Rock, Arkansas. Drunken Cryptids, Matthew Orton, has put together this amazing event with Bigfoot enthusiasts and speakers and cryptid speakers, including yours truly, speaking at Old Bart's in North Little Rock, Arkansas, June 6th at the Arkansas Cryptid Fest. There will be links in the description below. Please click the link, check it out. If you're in the area, please come see us.
So I know, I think we're doing two presentations for that one.
Dose.
Which one is for the VIPs, one is for like the public, I believe is how it is being is organized. I may be wrong.
Okay.
I can't read very well, as everybody that's not new to the show knows. But yes, and I know what we're doing them both on. I just don't know which one's going where.
Okay.
Which is exciting.
All right. I know one of them we discussed.
Yeah, it's one's about the book we have.
Oh, okay.
And the other one's about the other thing.
Okay, cool.
And I just don't know where, which one's going.
Which
where.
One will fall where?
I'm letting Matthew pick.
Okay, cool. Are we updating the book presentation? I know this is questions that probably don't need to be doing here on the.
Yeah, we'll worry about that later.
Okay, fine.
But anyway, so that, and then the weekend after,
The Bizarre Cornfield live show. What?
No, it's just.
Okay, you're going to say something.
I was smiling is all I was doing.
The Bizarre Cornfield with featuring Crypts of the Corn podcast and...
What's their name?
I always screw it up. Bizarre... No, wait. I don't know.
Believing in the Bizarre.
Yes, Believing in the Bizarre. I think it's because we put Bizarre first and Bizarre Cornfield. My brain is just...
Like...
Start there, Bizarre. So I just always screw it up. But Believing in the Bizarre. Live podcast show with Crypts of the Corn and Believing the Bizarre. Oh my gosh. And at the end in Ada, Ohio, then following weekend from June 6th. So June 13th, Ada, Ohio. Get your tickets now. Links also in the description below.
So yes, and the hotel link is available on the website as well.
Yes.
So there's a hotel block link for the inn, which is where the event is taking place.
Correct. So you'd never have to leave the building.
Yes.
And there'll be food and drinks. There's a bar and everything available. It'll be a fun, fantastic time to spend with your favorite podcasters in their own town. You can just stay the night, too. I mean, does it get any better than that? It truly doesn't. So a live podcast show. Come check us out. We'd be excited to see you guys this summer. I've seen a lot of you that have come to Ada, and it's always an enjoyable experience. And then as we move on later in the year, you know, we've got our Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree.
Oh, okay, before we get to that, there's other things that happened before that.
Okay.
In August, there's the Hocking Hills Bigfoot Festival.
That's correct.
I just talked to B, and we are doing our presentations again this year.
All right, our morning presentations.
Yes, so how I believe, I don't know if we're speaking again or not. I don't think B has gotten that far with the planning for that yet.
Okay.
Which either way, we're fine with. But we have been asked to do our presentations again, which will be ecologically based or with Bigfoot-ish stuff. In Ohio, they're normally about an hour and a half long. They're free form. So what that means is they're conversational based.
What that means is you just stand up there and talk to the crowd for, I don't know, about a half an hour about whatever. And then they ask questions in the middle of it.
And that's how I like to do these because it was really enjoyable. We did four of them last year.
Yeah, it was fun.
And there was questions that I didn't think to put into the presentation.
A very insightful audience.
Yes. And we had a lot of fun with them. So please come out for those. The Hocking Hills Bigfoot Festival is a lot of fun. The campground is open now.
We are staying at the campground.
Yes. Oh, and we owe Gary money.
So nah, I'll file it as an expense on my taxes, and I'm sure it'll be good.
Can you just take this out of my tax return?
Yeah. This is a write-off, sir.
No, so that's a lot of fun. So, yeah, the Hocking Hills.
Last year, you could have seen me take a shower bath at the spigot in the campgrounds in the middle of
her. People did.
Yeah, there's people.
Gary
did.
Was one of them sitting in the chair looking up at the hill.
Which is why he got us a spot right next to him this year.
Yep.
So we know we're on to you, Gary. And then after, well, even before that, we have the Indiana Bigfoot Conference that we will be
after.
That is after?
That's September.
Oh, you're right. It is September. It is. It's right before ours. Sorry. Yes. That's the Indiana Bigfoot Conference we will be speaking at. Not Somerset, Indiana. What am I thinking of?
Oh, gosh. Nashville, Indiana.
Is it Nashville, Indiana?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so that's a conference we've never been to yet.
They've invited us every year. I want to make that clear.
Yes.
It's just been very hard for us.
The way the date falls in the schedule.
Because they're super nice people.
Yes, we love those guys.
And it's a lot of Bigfoot, like a lot of people that have been in the Bigfoot community for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited to go to it.
Look at the poster.
Because, yeah, and then check out the poster advertisement.
September 25th and 26th.
That's my birthday.
It's the Seasons Lodge and Event Center is where it will be taking place. And the hotel that you can get at.
There we go.
It's IndianaBigfootConference.com to get your tickets and find all that information.
So come to the Indiana Bigfoot Conference.
It is Nashville.
Celebrate in Nashville, Indiana. Celebrate Bigfoot. And celebrate my birthday that weekend. Let's just make it a big party.
Now you want people to bring you moonshine like they used to for me?
No, I want moon rats. Bring me moon rats.
This is way before that comes out.
Yeah, I know. But they'll get it eventually. Foreshadowing. And then last but not least, how Bigfoot Jamber 3, October 3rd in Ada, Ohio, we'll be putting out more information. You guys will put out episodes and updates on that and what we're putting together because we've got a lot of new things we're putting together for that. So it's going to be really exciting this year.
I know we have. I mean, we're working on some Native American stuff. We're working on, like, Timothy Wayne Williams is going to do an art presentation. We have some Bigfoot speakers.
Podcast panel.
The podcast panel, which is actually huge because we have a lot of podcasters going to be there. From people that are not even started their podcast publicly yet to people that have been doing this for like 10 years.
And we got to get the Backwoods Boogeyman to come up there. And
Jeb will be there signing books.
Yep, signing books and cooking brats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, not brats, roller dogs.
Well, that's the cheddar brats is what he'll be cooking on the...
Do they have brats at gas stations? I don't think they're ever called brats.
That's what his whole art thing was about.
Roller dogs.
Cheddar brats. He was looking for the cheddar brats and never...
Cheddar dogs. He was looking for cheddar dogs.
No, cheddar brats.
I think you imagined the word brats.
Come on. You got to listen to the show.
I'm the one that fell asleep with it playing in the cabin.
Maybe that's what it is. You got fever dreams of...
I did have a bad one last night. It involved Bigfoot.
Uh-oh.
I had a nightmare involving Bigfoot.
Foreshadowing.
No, okay, we've been talking for 10 minutes about all this.
Okay.
Check out the links. Check out the website.
All right.
Jamboree tickets go on sale, I believe, April 1st.
Yes.
Cryptsofthecorn.com. How do our eyes and brain lie to us every single day?
Hmm.
So first we're going to talk, there's an article from Health Magazine by Daniel Joyce, which is, do our eyes really see the world upside down, is the title of the article. But it goes into like the inner workings of the eye and how us as humans perceive things around us.
Right.
Because on this show, many times we've talked about how, for example, manta shrimp see 11 more colors than we do,
mm-hmm.
or they have 11 color cones. And
we have three.
We have three.
Yeah.
So they see way more than 11 colors because we make every color we see out of three.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. And then we talk about visible light spectrum for us and versus other animals too. Like some animals can see the infrared spectrum, some can see the ultraviolet spectrum, mm-hmm. And some may only exist in those spectrums.
I was just reading a thing too about this person had like a fourth cone or whatever mm-hmm. in their eye, and they could see like...
Did they kill them? Or sorry, did they commit suicide?
I don't think so.
So that's one thing I found in this research of this.
Yeah.
Is that they think that's happened several times throughout history,
huh.
and they go kind of nuts.
Yeah, they were saying they could see like... or ultraviolet. Like
ultraviolet. That ultraviolet butts up to our visible light spectrum.
Yeah. There's something about they could see some ultraviolet colors were showing up on them. Yeah.
Which would make sense because we actually are spotted. Did you know that? We have colors.
Okay.
We have like patterns on our skin.
Oh, no. I didn't.
Like stripes and spots in ultraviolet.
Not freckles?
No, not just freckles. No, we actually have like stripes and spots in ultraviolet.
What? No, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. No, come on. You're pulling a trick on me.
I promise.
Oh, here we go. spots and stripes. What am I, a tiger?
Yeah, kind of. Some of them, I've never seen them quite like tiger patterns.
Now that would be sweet.
But more almost like the Na'vi from Avatar.
I really should see that movie.
Like tiger shark stripes and stuff like that. In certain spots where they don't go all the way around and stuff like that. They almost look like more like scars. Those kind of things.
Maybe it's the scars of your past lives.
Yeah. So our eyes work thanks to light. Objects can see are different sources of light themselves, like a candle or a phone screen, or lights bounce off of them, making its way to our eyes. First, light passes through the optical components of the eyes, such as the cornea, the pupil, the pupil, and lens. Together, they help focus the light into the retina that senses light, while also controlling the intensity of the light to help us see while avoiding damaging these sensitive components.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually, eye doctors can tell when you looked at the eclipse.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's burnt into the back of your retina.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they know exactly what part of the eclipse you stared at.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Huh. My friend, her dad was a he wasn't an eye doctor. He was an eye professor at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
So he taught about like the components of the eye and, you know, all that, like at Harvard. And so that was who I asked, like, when my dad had his eyeball cut in half. I was like, is this savable?
And he's like, no.
But they saved it. He sees out of it again.
The function of the lens is to correctly focus light that comes in from objects at different distances. This process is known as accommodations. While performing these important tasks, light passes through the lens becoming inverted. This means the light from the top of the object falls to the lowest part of the retina, and light from the bottom of the object falls to the higher parts of the retina. So it is upside down, essentially. When it hits,
on your eye, yeah.
So when it hits the lens inverts it, and then it hits the back of your eye upside down.
Correct, yeah.
While performing this important task, light passes through the lens, becomes inverted. This means the light... Oh, I already read that, sorry. So the light exiting the lens to land on the retina is indeed flipped upside down. But that doesn't mean the brain is actually flipping the picture back. The orientation actually doesn't matter. While the light is being interpreted to the brain is upside down compared to the real world, the question is it actually a problem for us? For your own experience, you can tell the answer is probably no. Your brain handles this just fine when we navigate and interact with the world. That's why your brain in the image is flipped and rotated 180 degrees to be the right way up. You may be surprised to learn that the vision scientists reject the idea of flipping or rotating needs to happen at all.
Okay.
So we used to think basically that we would flip it back again.
Mm-hmm.
Now they kind of think that, no, your brain just understands what that is. It's not flipping it or rotating it again. There's no third stage.
Right.
Your brain is just like, I know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you ever played a game with inverted controls.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Or like they did the bike thing, right? Where they inverted the bike controls.
Yeah.
And it took forever to learn.
To figure it out. But once you do.
Then you can't go back.
Yeah.
Even though you're turning left to go right and vice versa. That's kind of what they're saying here for the eye in the brain understanding.
It just naturally.
It's not flipping it again. And like there's no third step.
Yeah. So that's why when babies are first walking, they're all like wobbly. Their brain hasn't figured out how to.
Well, and it's depth perception. And it is.
I'm just screwing around.
No, it is. As we talked about that with some baby studies with invisible cliffs.
They think they're walking on the ceiling.
They can't tell. So like they did this with carpets.
Okay.
In this experiment.
Yeah.
With colored carpets and how the babies would think like, oh, that's an edge.
Okay.
And they wouldn't go near it, even though it's the same level.
Oh, really?
Because they don't understand how far away objects are yet.
Yeah. So like my nephew, he's just learning to walk, or he's got it now, but steps, like especially at the bowl now, there's like little ledges that go down. He walks right up to him like there's nothing there. Like, he just steps down like it's a level ground.
Because it probably looks the same.
It probably does, but you can see him, like, looking like, okay, something's not... I'm test feeling the waters with my toe, but then he just goes for it.
The object is perceived is encoded by the firing of various nerves. The brain cell then processes the information, the various locations in the brain. The pattern as firing is what encodes the information to the object you're focusing on. This info takes into account the object's relation to everything else in the scene, your body in the world, and your movements. an incredibly complex process. So this is important for understanding when we start cutting out information later.
Okay.
So like we talk about the duck experiment, because what I just said is a ton of information your brain is taking in every millisecond your eyes are open.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we start talking about people not perceiving everything that they're seeing, that's why your brain starts cutting corners to make it more efficient, focusing on what I need to focus on and letting the other stuff kind of get blurry.
Because it's a lot going on at once.
Yeah. And this is why like animals like tuataras and stuff like that, why a bunch of their relatives went extinct, is that they were a little slower at this.
Okay.
So by the time they were firing an attack or defense response, the thing was already over.
Okay, gotcha.
So yeah, like fast twitch muscle fiber, essentially, you know, responding. And as long as the relation encoding of all these are consistent with one another, as well as stable, there is no need for flipping to happen at all. What can function with upside down goggles? Several studies have looked into the adaptation of large changes in visual inputs by asking people to wear goggles that actually flips the image coming in again. This means the image lands on the retina the right side up, so to speak, but upside down for the brain's perception that it has learned it that it should be.
Right.
In the 1930s, two scientists in Austria performed the task in the Unkerbach goggle experiment. For weeks and even months at a time, participants in these studies wore goggles that altered the way that the world around them looked. This included goggles that turned the incoming images upside down. As you can imagine, people wearing these goggles at first found it extremely difficult to do anything in the day-to-day. They would stumble, bump, and fall. But this was temporary. Participants reported seeing the world upside down for the first few days, with difficulty navigating the environment, including trying to step over ceiling fans that appeared to be on the floor. Another, or around the fifth day, however, performance seemed to improve greatly. Things that seemed to first see upside down now appeared right way up, and this tended to improve more and more with time.
Huh.
In other words, with continued exposure to the upside down world, the brain will adapt and change the input directions. More recent studies are beginning to identify which areas of the brain are actually involved in being adapt to changing visual inputs, and with what limits our ability to adapt might be.
Hmm.
Adaptation may even allow colorblind people to see colors with better perception in right conditions.
That's interesting.
So yeah, so that's article of how our brain actually perceives.
With those colorblind thing they're talking about, like those glasses that help colorblind people see color?
Yeah, basically changing the input. Condition.
Yeah.
And then allowing the brain to adapt.
To interpret it differently, I guess. Oh, that's really interesting.
So this is why this is important for when we start talking about the paranormal in the next article, which is talking about how much of reality our eyes and brain can actually perceive. Mm-hmm. The brain wants to streamline this process as much as possible.
Right, yeah.
They do not want to take in all of this information constantly.
Yeah, it's too much. It's overwhelming.
The duck experiment, like we've talked about, I just did this at the Ada school pond where I stopped and I looked. And there were actually like hooded mergansers and stuff like that, which are just...
Mergansers?
Yeah. Which
no way.
Big, like they have a big white and black fin on their head.
Yeah.
Like they look crazy. But when I first drove past, they were mallards.
Yeah.
Green and black ducks.
Yeah.
And they were white and black like pandas with a giant fin on their head with red faces.
Are those like rare?
They're flying over right now. They don't hang around very long.
Oh, okay.
A flightway stop.
I've never seen or heard of them.
Yeah, I mean, on our part of Ohio, they're more rare, but you get around Indian Lake and like St. Mary's and the channels and stuff like that, you'll see them.
Okay.
They're more secretive, but they're not like rare.
Right. Okay.
When we were doing stuff in Beaver Falls, like they were all over the rocks.
Okay. They just like, they migrate.
They like certain areas and then they stop over every place. So yeah. But even like buffleheads, are another duck that we don't, like people don't pay attention and they are huge and gold eyes, which are another black and white duck with these giant piercing gold and yellow eyes.
Okay.
And they've been out there and stuff like that. But you look in their mallards.
Yeah, I never...
Because your brain is painting with existing information it has.
You never stop and smell the ducks. I mean, see them.
It's like how the old cartoons used to have the reel of background.
Oh, yeah. On the constant. Yeah.
Where it was, you know, every time I would leave, it would be the same thing.
Huh?
So that's what your brain is doing to the focusing field. Because it just needs to know how basically far away those things are. And that's all it kind of cares about unless you're in danger or you need to know it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the second you actually look and stop at them, your brain is like, okay, all right, let's get the actual information down.
Yeah.
But yeah, ready for the next one?
I think so. Oh, I wanted to make a little point too. Just from anatomy class, I remember. You have the blind spot on your eye as well, mm-hmm. where the optic nerve
is actually coming in.
Coming into the retina, yeah, attaching to it.
And it's right down the middle.
So what that means is basically if your right eye, it's a little off to your right, and left eye, it's a little off to your left, but there's an actual spot that you cannot see at all.
Unless you like stare at it, like move your eyes.
Right, you have to move your eyes to see it.
Straightforward.
It's just off to the side. But it does, it disappears, but your brain fills in all the gaps.
I can't see that, but I know my hand's there, but
It's behind your head. I'm just kidding.
That's to the side.
I know, I'm screwing with you. I wonder why you can't see it. Yeah. It's behind you. Yep, blind spot.
My mom said she could always see back there.
She could, though. Moms can. Moms are born. When moms have kids, the third eye opens on the back of their head. I was
going to say, like, they grow two pairs of eyes in the back.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, so what is... We've always kind of colloquially heard it. What percentage of reality can the human see or experience?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember.
What percentage of light can humans experience?
Was it like 10%, 15%?
Like 5.
Oh, 5%, okay.
And that's not true. That's actually the wrong number. The human eye can actually only see about 0.0035% of reality.
How's that?
Exploring the Limits of Perception is the name of this article. And this is by Chester Catapala.
Is it just what, are they just counting what you can sense and feel in your immediate self?
Well, I just said the human eye can only see about 0.0035% of reality.
Okay, so what?
That's light, matter.
Your field of vision.
No, I'm talking light and matter, not your field of vision. When we talk, so we've talked about the light spectrum, right?
Right.
Humans can only see that narrow bit.
Yeah.
Humans can't even see all types of matter.
What? Is that why those invisible Bigfoots go running by?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Matter? Does that matter?
Exploring the limits of our perception. Have you ever wondered how we actually see reality? According to some researchers, the human eye only can perceive the smallest fraction of the world around us, leaving us vastly majority of reality hidden from our view. We're going to talk about that in this article. All right, so the limits of human perception. The Roy G. Biv.
Yeah, I love that guy.
While we like to think that our senses are reliable indicators of the world around us, the truth is our perception is limited by our biology greatly. In the case of light, for example, our eyes are only capable of detecting an extremely narrow range of the electromagnetic radiation spectrum of light, known as the visible spectrum. And if you look at the whole like light wave, like it's incredible. Like how little we can see.
Yeah, just a little sliver.
Mm-hmm. And ultraviolet and infrared are the ones on each side of it.
Okay.
Which UV was the one we were talking about earlier, which is the one that butts up where we've talked about in the past that humans may, a couple random genetic one-offs
mm-hmm.
may be able to see that.
Yeah.
And animals go into both infrared and UV, depending on the species.
Okay.
But I mean, keep in mind, like FM radio, AM radio wave, long range radio waves, X-rays, Y rays, like
ham radio waves,
microwaves,
gamma rays.
So like there is like that is light radiation.
Yeah,
you can look like if you could see the rays bouncing around.
Yeah,
in a microwave.
If you could see them all, yeah, that would be wild.
But yeah, in the case of light, our eyes are only see the visible spectrum. The spectrum includes wavelengths of light that range approximately 400 to 700 nanometers, corresponding to the color of the rainbow, the Roy G. Biv.
Yes.
However, there are many wavelengths of light that fall outside of visible spectrum, such as ultraviolet and infrared radiation. That's the ones that touch both sides of the spectrum. While we do have technology that can detect these wavelengths, our eyes are incapable of perceiving them in any way, shape, or form. As a result, we are only able to see a tiniest fraction of the light that presents in our environment. But light is just one aspect of reality that our senses are limited in perceiving. But this is when we start getting into matter.
Okay.
We can't even see and sense all forms of matter.
Right. We can't see atoms.
Well, I mean, electricity in the air and stuff like
oh, yeah.
Like there's a lot. There's a lot that people take for granted.
Like plasmoids?
Like plasma, maybe.
Okay.
The insides of plasmoids.
Yes.
They cut them open and it just leaks out everywhere.
Plasmoids.
Burns you.
Dissecting a plasmoid.
See, well, yeah, when we talked about that, like, maybe they do have, like, a membrane around them, like a jellyfish, that's just the inside.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, so many of the phenomena falls outside. But, like, just one aspect. There are many other phenomena that fall outside the sensory range, such as sound frequencies that are too high and too low for us to hear, the smells that are too faint for our nose to detect, and even our sense of touch is limited to an extremely narrow range of pressures and temperatures. This is, for example, you ever touch something cold and it just feels wet?
Yeah.
That's one of those things.
Uh-huh.
Your brain is lying to you. It doesn't know how to interpret that.
You ever seen the Punisher movie? Mm-mm. There's a scene where basically this guy's coming to get him or whatever, capture him, and he ends up capturing him, and he starts, like, doing quote-unquote torture to him to get answers out of him. Mm-hmm. But all he was doing is he had him strapped upside down, and he had a popsicle stick, and he was showing the guy, he had a big blowtorch on a piece of iron. He was just getting red hot and just getting red hot. And the guy's watching him do it, and he goes behind him so he can't see him. He's like, "You gonna tell me, you know, whatever?" And the guy didn't say anything, so he takes the popsicle stick and he shoves it into his back, and then he takes that red hot thing and just sticks it on a piece of meat behind him so you can smell it burning or sizzling. And the guy's like screaming like bloody murder.
Like he's actually experiencing
He's being
it.
Cooked, yeah, and it's just a popsicle. So then he tells him everything, and then he comes out from behind him and takes the popsicle and just shoves it in his mouth and realizes what just happened.
There's a new game. Oh gosh, what's it called? Dispatch.
Okay.
Superhero game.
Okay.
The guy's interrogating somebody, and he's like, has him tied to a chair and is going to throw him out to like an 8-story balcony.
Mm-hmm.
But he's blindfolded too.
Okay.
So he finally lets him go, and he falls and he lands into a dumpster with mattresses.
Oh yeah.
Like he was always planning on letting him go, but it was fell into something to catch him.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he was blindfolded, so he couldn't look down and see it.
See that
he
there was mattresses.
He could hear the cars, and he could feel the air and everything.
You ever seen those videos, too, where they'll blindfold somebody and, like, they'll put them on, like, a plank of wood and make them stand there, mm-hmm. and then they pretend to, like, lift them up off the ground, and they'll, like, put a board over their head so it feels like they're hitting the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll tell them to, like, all right, you know, like, step across or something. They'll push them off it, and they think they're like 10 feet up in the air, and they're literally on the ground.
I mean, the VR ones are like that too.
Yeah, VR ones.
Where you think you're falling?
Yeah,
it works. Okay, so where does the claim of only seeing 0.0035% come from? It comes from the work of David Eagleman, a neuroscientist at Stanford University. The book that he wrote this in, "The Brain: The Story of You," and this basically explains the visible light spectrum of light makes up only the tiniest fraction of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Right.
Which includes everything from radio waves to gamma rays. According to Eagleman, the visible spectrum corresponds to roughly just 0.0035% of the total electromagnetic spectrum.
Okay.
So that's how much of the spectrum of the universe
we can see.
That we can even perceive.
Right.
Which is nothing.
Which, we can perceive.
It is about 1/1000th.
You can perceive gamma rays when they're burning your microwave, boiling your skin.
I don't know if you can even perceive them. It's just, you know, you just die.
It's just hot.
I don't know if you would get hot.
well,
because there are certain like cosmic types of cosmic radiation that would just go through you.
That's true.
And then you don't know it.
That happens all the time. Like dark matter.
A lot of radiation, you don't know, you don't feel it.
No, right.
You just know later that, I'm riddled with tumors.
Sunburnt.
This means that if you represent the entire spectrum as a 1,000-mile road trip, okay, so if the whole spectrum, I said.
Okay.
It's a 1,000-mile road trip. How much do you think we could see?
40 feet.
2 feet.
Two? Holy crap.
So if the whole light spectrum, or the electromagnetic spectrum, is 1,000 miles, you could only see 2 feet with the visible spectrum.
That's insane.
So keep that in mind. That's here to, that's Ada, Ohio to roughly Daytona Beach. Roughly. It's like 900 and some, like change.
Right. Tampa.
You could only see 1 more foot or 2 feet past your nose.
Yeah, that's wild.
And trying to explain the rest of the universe that way and talk about phantoms and monsters and demons and fae.
So anyone that thinks they know anything.
That's what I guess that's kind of the point of this is that our own bodies. Mm-hmm. Are so limited
mm-hmm.
in perception, but we trick ourselves into like, well, we know everything. We can experience everything.
Yeah.
No, you can see just the tiniest sliver. And I've used this metaphor before. It's like going into a completely pitch black warehouse
mm-hmm.
with a candle
mm-hmm.
and trying to find anything.
Right, yeah.
And you just, you know, this tiny little, or lighter, you know, this tiny little light, and you're trying to move around and find a cat in there or something, you know.
I mean, that's like 99.9% of all humans. There's the one exception would be like Neil deGrasse Tyson. He wouldn't have a candle. He has like a mega spotlight.
That one that like has fans in it to keep it cool.
Yeah. Because he's just so enlightened.
I do want that.
And knows everything.
I want that flashlight bad.
Just so bright.
But yeah, you ever seen him?
They light up.
They're like $1,000.
They light up the night sky.
You can only have them on for like 30 or 40 seconds.
Oh, really?
Because it gets so hot.
Yeah, that's insane.
So that sounds like a small amount, but it's important to remember the electromagnetic spectrum is just one aspect of reality where we're limited into perceiving.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the electromagnetic spectrum. That's not even matter.
Right, yeah.
When you consider all the other phenomena that fall outside our sensory range, the amount of reality we can perceive becomes even smaller than that original percentage.
See, and that's the trick that's played on all of us is they lock you into, like, this perceived reality is everything.
Right, and I guess that's the point of this episode.
Yeah.
Is that when we start talking about, like, you mentioned earlier, the interdimensional, like, Bigfoot, like, the running invisible things,
these
barriers, these, like, the gray zones we talk about,
mm-hmm.
that you can't perceive what's happening to you. And what we talked about, there's shadow people a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Where I really believe that they're not pitch black, like the one I seen. I don't think it was actually blacker than black, but that's mm-hmm. how I perceived it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because my brain could not perceive whatever it was made out of.
Right.
But knew that there was something disturbing there and gave me a shape to work with.
Right, yeah.
And to get away or, you know, to defend myself or, you know, leave. But even like the animals in that encounter. We're all freaking out.
Oh, yeah. Nuts. They definitely saw it, sensed mm-hmm. it, or felt it. I would say they could see it.
Well, I mean, like, Fluffy was striking at it, and that was the most peaceful snake I've ever had in my life. The lizards and the fish were going nuts. I mean, Fluffy broke every tooth in her head hitting the glass at that thing. And so these animals can perceive a little bit more than we can. I mean, so infrared, or infrared snakes can perceive infrared.
Snakes can perceive infrared?
They have these pit sensory organs in their face.
Okay.
Pit vipers specifically have these giant ones. But if you look at like snakes, where like for ball pythons, they have like these puppy dog lips.
Okay.
And they're heat sensing organs in their face.
Yeah.
So yes, they can't see it with their eyes, but they can sense it with this other organ they have.
That's interesting.
So yeah, it's different than vision.
Animals are cool.
So the idea that we can only see a tiny fraction of reality has significantly impacts in both science and philosophy. From a scientific perspective, it suggests that this may be the entire realm of existence that we are currently unable to study or even perceive and comprehend.
Right.
So this is where we're getting into our paranormal talks.
Mm-hmm.
That there are, like, the things you're tripping on, there could be whole entities, living beings. And I'm not even talking ghosts and demons and that kind of stuff. I'm talking animals that just live in this side of reality.
Yeah.
Creatures, organic, like...
Or this spectrum of reality.
Yes. And that we can just bump into the edges of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they may not be able to perceive us.
Right.
And we look like ghosts to them. And we've talked about that with some of the shadow people entity encounters where they run from you. Or they seem scared of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe because you look like that to them.
Yeah.
That you are just like whatever has happening right then and there. You are rubbing the edges of realities, and you are just each other are barely perceive the other one. And it's terrifying. Mm. It's a terrifying experience.
It's like oil and water. You just don't mix.
And it's pushing through the barriers. So for example, there may be many forms of matter and energy that are even beyond the current understanding of physics. So the best example of this I can give for people at home, and we've talked about it many times. We actually did a whole episode on it. The double slit experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Is the edge of understanding of humanity, where reality, matter, light, knows when it's being observed
right.
and knows when it's not being observed by a conscious observer.
So weird.
A conscious observer. It's been done over 300 times in labs, and only one study ever showed that it didn't work. And most people believe that there was probably a fault in that one study.
Yeah, or set up to fail.
Yeah. And it's been done for over 100 years. It's been done in many, many countries. It gets the same result every time.
And
even like, so you were picking on them earlier, And I don't care for the man either, Neil deGrasse Tyson. But there are some clips he has that I do think are very educational, and he explains stuff very well. When this is one, if you look up his example for this, his example of the double slit experiment, it's great. It's a great graphic. He explains it very slowly, and it's easy to understand for people. And I do enjoy that video of his, where it's just, and it's even he says, you know, it's, we don't know why. We have no idea.
I knew he was your favorite.
I don't care for him for many, many other reasons.
No, I know. I'm just kidding.
But as a scientist, you know, he's very accomplished. And anyways, he did get rid of Pluto, though, and I've always hated him for that.
Yeah, I don't know. Scientist, let's pump the brakes on the scientist.
No, he's not Bill Nye.
If that's the case, then I'm a scientist, too. I am.
No, like, Bill Nye's not a real scientist.
Correct. He's a
Neil deGrasse Tyson chemical engineer. He is a real scientist.
Well, I mean, so am I.
But where you have this, where we know X, Y, and Z, like, we know that if you shoot light particles at two slits,
right,
and you're watching it, this happens. And if you turn around, and we all agree not to watch, it does a completely different thing.
Yeah, that's just weird.
Right, like, there's nothing supposedly conscious that's going on there.
Right.
But it knows when it's being watched.
And it's just really, it's measuring potential versus kinetic energy is all I can, best way I can describe it.
It just behaves so differently because it's like, the second you stop watching it, the paper's not there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just like potential energy, you know, it's, everything's possible, you know, all the outcomes are possible. But when kinetic energy, it's already happened, it's locked into reality. And I don't know, it's just what you're measuring somehow.
So as far as forms of matter and energy that exist beyond our current understanding of physics, with dimensional space, time barriers and stuff, another big holdback with this is that if we can't imagine it, we can't build technology to try to find it. So like dark matter, for example, which is still up in the air, like black matter and dark matter are still up in the air. And we had to build these giant technologies, and we think we have recorded it a couple times. And we had to imagine the idea, you know, 60, 70, 80 decades ago and beyond.
Right.
And then spent all that time developing technology
to detect it,
to kind of maybe hopefully find it.
Yeah.
And we maybe did.
Yeah.
So you have to, to even be able to perceive these realities of matter in the spectrums of light, electromagnetics, electricity, all this stuff, you have to have the ability to imagine it. And which is something we can't even comprehend. You have to have the ability to imagine that, and then ability to, how can we detect it with science?
Right.
Like light, we knew that when we started experimenting with light, for example, we knew there were other forms of light beyond what we could see. And then we started discovering X-rays, and we started discovering, so we build off each other.
Right.
We didn't just go to the long range radio waves immediately.
Like, oh, there they are.
Yeah. And then, you know, it took time. It took a lot of time. And then that's one spectrum, and we have ends to it, but we don't really think it ends. We just, that's where we've gotten. So for matter, we kind of think the same thing. And I'm not talking even just the three states of matter. This is more like dark matter and normal matter.
Yeah.
Where they're completely separate groups. And we don't know what dark matter is. That's just kind of a catch-all term for the ether or the mysteriousness of the universe.
Right. Even the ether is a controversial topic.
Yeah, which is fine. I'm just saying these are terms for stuff that we are kind of like right now on the verge of being able to detect, in not understand by any way, shape, or form, but understand more of it. Like I said, we have these giant like sensors that they build in the ice sheets. Ever seen that thing with the purest water on Earth and stuff like that?
Like underneath the ice sheets?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To use it as a giant radio dish to try to catch some of these things.
Yeah.
And they, you know, just even trying, and we maybe have done it three times, I think, the last time I looked into it, where they have these data points where they're like, well, we got something.
There's something here, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, we've talked about it with, like, and this is where it starts coming into portals, and we don't understand, like, when we drop the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and there's these living green fires or these, like, we made the joke on Patreon that these djinn are burning.
Yeah.
Or yokai are burning. And these things that we fundamentally don't understand, but we can affect. And they can affect us. The domino, you know, nukes. And this kind of comes into aliens and stuff like that. where after we started dropping nukes and experimenting with nukes, and I'm not meaning traditional, like whatever aliens are,
whatever that phenomena is. Right.
But some of the early ones were, you know, like living in the earth, and they are maybe a part of our, you know, whole biosphere that we can't detect, and they never cared about us until we made them care about us, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't affect each other on a normal basis. That's kind of like the Atlantean theory you see in like the MCU, where the Atlanteans hid from Earth until the humans, the surface dwellers, started polluting the ocean enough to like
making it a
okay.
Point.
Now you're affecting us, and now we have a problem.
We can't even get away from you here.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's kind of that deal to where our nukes were was that the first piece of technology, and then you start getting into the experiments at the TNT plant, the Stranger Thing-esque, you know, happenings where we're ripping apart realities, the mist.
Yeah,
you know, where we think we're making windows and we're making doors, and that's affecting things far beyond our understanding.
Right.
Here, I'm not saying there. Greater than us, but beyond our comprehension.
Right. Yeah. Beyond our reality.
Yeah. But they live here with us. You know, they live in the same, like two types of matter can occupy the same space and not interact.
Right. And is that all, like when people start talking about dimensions and things like that, is that what they're talking about? Just the different, I guess, spectrum of matter just overlapped in itself and... That maybe that's just the different.
Yeah, you're
dimension.
Not going anywhere.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's like a stacked dimension.
Yeah,
and so dimension is. I don't like the word anymore.
Dimensions.
Yeah, because there's so many meanings and types of things.
Layers.
Well, like the third dimension versus the fourth dimension of reality, right? Yeah. And then like 2D, 3D, 4D, whatever. That's different than what we just talked about, like stackable dimensions, where they both may be 3D dimensions, but they're made of different stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So they're occupying the same fish tank.
I think that's seven dimensions.
But so with the idea of only being able to see 0.003% of reality may be daunting, it also opens up the world of possibilities. For example, it suggests there may be forms of consciousness and perception that exist well beyond our current understanding. And if you're religious, I'm a Christian. So this is when we start talking about angels and God and the underlying consciousness of the universe. AKA God.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like how, you know things are happening. Some researchers have proposed the existence of what are called hyperdimensional beings that are able to perceive these realities and are completely invisible to us. And I've seen people say that with UFOs and all this stuff that, you know, that they are just butting up to the, you know, to the edge. They don't actually look like that. Like a Tic Tacs and these, you know, these metal doors and these squares.
Okay.
They don't look like that. That is just like the Shadow Man thing I talked about earlier.
It's just what we...
We know our brain, our sensory, our machines know that something's there. And if you ever see, there's like, if you believe the Tic Tac and you believe some of these military captures of UFOs on like radar and sonar for submersible objects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Some of them have like envelopes around them of stuff. And we don't know what that is at all. And that could be more of the actual craft that is at the edge of technological understanding for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see, we know something's there, and that's it. And that's what ghosts are. That could be what ghosts are. That could be what aliens are. That could be what some of these cryptids are. And that's why they look so weird, is because we are not getting the full picture.
We're just getting a sliver.
And your brain, like the giant teeth thing. I've always, and because we've had nightmares about that. Humans have nightmares about that. And I could be like, for example, the Endenfield horror, the three-legged monster with the giant teeth.
Okay.
Could have maybe not had giant teeth. And it could have looked a lot different than what we think it did. Because your brain is not being able to perceive it, but is scared of it.
Yeah.
So what is it doing? It's painting it a monster for you.
Making it scarier and bigger.
It's giving the big white teeth, the giant glowing red eyes.
Yeah.
You know, it's hitting the button. Because it's on another one that didn't do a lot.
Okay.
You know, it was terrifying to look at. Don't get me wrong. It tried to eat a refrigerator unit, but it was on the doorstep but it didn't like break into the house.
Yeah.
It didn't eat the kid. Or didn't
drag him out of there. Yeah.
Or tried to.
Right, exactly.
And the kids on the train tracks had seen it. It could have done those things. So is that our brain can just kind of barely sense some parts of it and is painting the rest of it for us to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than try to, because humans are naturally extremely curious. It's how we're made. So to override that, you know, the lizard part of your brain, the survival part of your brain, is like, I don't want to be curious about this. We need to leave.
Right, yeah.
So how do I make you leave? I'm going to paint it. I'm going to put the big red eyes, the giant sharp teeth. I'm going to make it look like a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to everything from people that have unfortunately experienced the worst part of humanity, like being raped or, you know, being attacked and stuff like that. And attackers, yeah, we've talked about that many times. There's so many studies showing that people that fall victim to these horrible, horrible atrocities have extremely hard times of remembering.
Recall.
What their attacker looked like.
Yeah.
They often make them a lot bigger, a lot bulkier, and a lot scarier.
Yep.
So is that happening to these interdimensional creatures? Is that happening to these things that it's just that part of your brain is just making them monsters?
Right, making it worse, but so to protect you from the future, I guess.
Yeah,
you
it's know? Just it's
defense mechanism.
Yeah. In addition, the limits of human perception have inspired many artists and thinkers to explore the ideas of alternate realities, science fiction to surrealism. The notion maybe in other worlds beyond our current understanding has captivated human beings for a long time. And this, like I said, this while David Eggman's claims of visible spectrum make up just 0.003% of reality has been widely cited, important to note that a number is based on somewhat arbitrary definitions of reality. You know, he's picking certain things and putting them all into one group.
Yeah.
Light, matter, electromagnetics, smell, and sound.
Okay.
And that's kind of how he got his number, which I'm not saying is wrong, but it's kind of like, where are we cutting, you know, pieces?
Right. Yeah.
But and I mean, that's only types of things that we even know to look for.
Right. Yeah. Just of our senses
that we know to look for.
Yeah.
In like dark matter is just like how dark matter came to be, or black matter, dark matter. It's all the same, but was just because, like, I think it was Einstein. I may be wrong, but doing his equations and doing the math and stuff like that kind of had a gap, and that's how they found it.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And where, like, there should be something here.
Right. Yeah. Something needs to fill this gap and account for this in order, yeah, for all this.
And then they started looking for it.
Yeah.
So if these systems can be independent of each other,
mm-hmm,
you have no idea to look for them.
Right. Exactly.
If it's not touching our reality, or maybe even just barely touching,
mm-hmm,
like we talk about with these gray zones. We talk about with, you know, these just apparently these portals that open up. They may not look like that. Like the giant red squares of New Zealand, the metal doors of Skinwalker Ranch that just pop up and appear.
Right.
And it's just, yeah. I don't know. What do you think of that?
I mean, it's weird. I mean, it's just weird. I mean, I didn't boil it down at the end of the day. But no, I mean, it is an important thing to understand because, you know, we're bouncing through reality every day. You're only getting this little sliver of it.
And nothing. You like we are dealing like,
yeah, but we have this perceived notion in our heads that we are the most or we're the most advanced human beings that ever lived on the history of the earth. And
that could be true. That but it doesn't mean we're super advanced.
No, I don't think it does, and I don't think it does mean that is true.
I think it matters. I think we are probably the most technology heavy.
Dependent?
Yeah, like, it's in everything.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I do believe some ancient cultures maybe had sound technology and stuff like that.
I mean, I wouldn't even be shocked if we're just reliving, like, this reality we're living in now has already happened.
I don't think this stuff has happened before.
No, we don't know. We would all be gone if it did anyways, you know what I mean?
I think there would be signs, but that's me. That's just personal.
Maybe. But let's just say it did happen.
There's so many chemicals and pollutants and stuff like
that. Oh,
when
I know,
all this stuff starts breaking down,
yeah, I know.
There's going to be big sludgy piles.
You give it a, yeah, it's called oil. You give it a million years, and there it is. or shoot, might even be 1,000 years. We don't know nothing.
Oh, you can make oil in a day. We talked about this.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It could be, everything could just be, we don't know. That's what I'm saying, is what you're pointing it out. You're making the big point across all this is we don't know at the end of the day hardly anything.
We don't even have the hardware or the wetware to look into it.
That's right. You need, and the wetware is the important part. I thought it was hardware and software.
Software is computers.
Ah,
hardware,
okay,
is physical equipment. Wetware is you.
We're wetware?
So wetware is like organic components.
Oh, okay.
Like we are made of wetware technically.
Ah, okay.
But now they're like, we've talked about with the fungus, like being integrated in computers and stuff,
yeah,
like that. Even though it's not like quote unquote wet.
Wet software.
It's wetware is what it's called.
Sweatware.
like the organic machines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The rat and algae hearts, maybe the stingrays.
But we don't, I mean, we don't know nothing. I think that bothers me when we see figures on, you know, the television or in roles of importance that claim to be using science or to be using the science to make claims, and that in turn directly affects our lives and our version of reality, our perceived version of reality. It directly affects it. And I don't know. I think when you start pulling at the strings and start questioning some of this stuff, because I think we do need to start questioning things more and more nowadays, especially. But we don't, because we have the old Google at our fingertips and we just think we know everything and we think we're already connected, and whatever is out there, especially it comes from a mouth of someone of authority figure, it's just going to be true. But it's not, because things are deceptive. Our eyes can lie to us. Our ears can lie to us.
You can't,
yeah, and they can tell us that they're lying to us.
Getting to the paranormal and stuff like that. I mean, how do you think? So this is, we're barely a quarter way into my articles.
Yeah.
For this. But so far, how do you think this affects like the paranormality of the world?
I think it just goes to show that even if you don't believe in like paranormal stuff,
I guess it's hard because that word has gotten such a bad rap.
Right. Well, you got paranormal, supernatural, and
mystery.
Mysterious.
Mean,
yeah.
I mean, if you look up shows like The Mysteries of the Universe and stuff like that, it's paranormal.
Yeah.
Or supernatural.
Yeah.
Which just means it is extraordinary. It's all the same. It just means it is a natural phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
It is just an extreme natural phenomena. Like if you'd never experienced a volcano before, an actual volcano.
Yeah.
No human has. We didn't know they existed. And that one at the end of the Triassic, it comes out of Russia, and it's spitting up a continent's worth of material, you know, every day.
Yeah.
That's insane. Or tectonic plate movements, which are, you know, questionable too. But watching like these giant rifts open up and, you know, lava when it hits air, but lava come pouring out.
Right.
Volcanic glass, you know, towers. And you would think these are obelisk made. And it's another extremely chaotic, powerful event, or lightning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lightning can create all sorts of crazy stuff.
But I'm just saying, it's a natural phenomena that we take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Where it strikes and it's so much intense power
all at once,
and it's hotter than the surface of the sun.
Yeah,
in a millisecond, and it's gone.
Yep.
And people get struck by it. My old boss got hit 3 different times.
My dad got hit by it,
and you survive it, and it's crazy. And then we just take these things for granted, and then anything that's labeled as paranormal, like ghost, and I don't think ghosts are people. I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least human souls. I don't think human souls are stuck here. But I do think some of them are recordings or etchings, whatever the underlying materials are. I mean, it could be dark matter for all I know. They could be right. I have no proof that they're wrong. That they're, yes, 80% of matter is actually dark matter. I don't know.
I have no way
of knowing. And they could be right. But maybe that stuff with traumatic psychic energy, and by that I don't mean psychic as in like flipping tarot cards and that. I'm not saying anything good, bad, and different about that, but
yeah,
not talking like that. I mean like psychological energies. Our brain is an electromagnetic being that is putting off so much energy.
Yeah.
That tragic events, because you see these repeatable hauntings are almost always horribly tragic. Civil war.
Like burnt into your DNA. Well,
burnt into the reality around it.
Yeah.
Suicides. You know, that's when you see these residual hauntings. It's like suicides, war zones. Suicides, war zones are like the big ones.
Mm.
I mean, there are others, but...
No, you're right. I mean, I'm just thinking about...
In the state of mind...
Current day.
To take your life is... If you get pushed that far...
You're in a very negative, dark
state of mind. And it's horrible. And it's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
For somebody to feel so alone and think that the world is a better place without them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to get that far psychologically, that energy is extremely strong.
Very powerful.
So when they do end up taking their lives, then, you know, that's burnt there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you see these hauntings do the last, whatever, day or half hour or whatever of their life.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the one we did from season 2, but where the lady would walk in the doorway, walk up the stairs, do her makeup, and then she jumped out the window.
Oh, gosh.
And then everybody, like... could say they see it. And you could stand in front of her and she'd just go through you. Or Civil War battles.
Yeah, that one's bad.
I mean, where brothers are killing brothers, cousins are killing cousins. Like, you hear the battles, or, you know, you see, like, the ghost figures, or you...
Oh, yeah.
Feel the horses walking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people's psychological energies being poured into the ether, mm-hmm. like a big stamp. And maybe it gets eroded over time. And maybe when it first happened, it was a stronger residual effect.
Yeah.
And you start getting almost like, like electrical tape, as in electronically recording things. Even if it's not being replayed, it degrades.
Yeah, over time, like VHS, a VCR. Yeah, or VHS, yeah.
VHS tapes degrade.
Mm.
They're electromagnetically infused tapes, right?
Yeah.
So they degrade. Even if they're not being watched many times, they degrade. So this thing can maybe being degraded. And that's where you start, like for example, a lot of the Gettysburg stuff, they don't see them anymore, hardly. But you hear them, you feel them
still. Yeah, the static in the air.
Is that because it's degraded that far, or the visual outputs maybe aren't nearly as strong,
mm-hmm.
but it's still there in some of these hauntings? That's why a lot of hauntings, you really look at how old is the oldest haunting you can really think of that you know about?
Gosh, that's a good question. I don't know.
300 years? That's about as far as back, like a famous haunting that you can still go to this day.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah, I guess so.
Like Civil War, 300 years.
Yeah, it'd have to be something
Indian,
like that.
Some Indian European wars.
Yeah.
Maybe,
mm-hmm.
you know, you still hear some of that stuff. It's like 300 years. So is that the half-life or the erosion time it takes?
Right.
For these, and I'm not saying the energy fully disappears, but to where maybe we can't even perceive it after that point.
And what if just...
And you feel it then. You know, I don't want to be here. I can feel energy.
What if just human beings too, I don't know, just kind of forget about events that happen, and maybe that's what also kills the energy.
Sure.
Like if ghosts, you know, like ghosts, or we talk about like Monsters, Inc. being like a reality or a documentary as opposed to where like these beings are basically scaring you and taking your adrenaline and your, you know what I mean? Taking that scary energy. And that's why,
New laughs now. Thank you, sir.
Well, that's the new. Yeah. Just in reality, like if ghosts or hauntings are trying to scare you or trying to get that rise out of you, maybe they just feed off human energy, and that's just what they need to continue or to survive. So if humans aren't there to feed it or provide the energy, maybe they do just, it fades away or dies or mm-hmm. or degrades enough to where it's gone.
It's just, yeah. Mm-hmm. I really think that this, like... between paranormal study and science is there's no difference. Understanding, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. is just writing it down.
And it's bothersome to me to see where the, like I mentioned earlier, like authority figures or famous scientists will lock into like.
It's dogma is what it's called.
Oh yeah. Phases of like this is what's reality exists within reality. Anything beyond this is just like you said, supernatural or, what was the other word we were using? Not supernatural.
Paranormal.
But just paranormal.
Like
just that stuff. They make it seem like that stuff's not real, not part of reality. It's just like sci-fi mumbo jumbo. I think it plays just as much of a role as our so-called, I guess, real science we have now.
I mean, when you're talking about black holes and everything like this, that mm-hmm. I mean, just perceived, I mean, you're talking about monsters, matter consumers on a cosmic scale.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I've heard people think that they, like, scientists think that they may create what we think as ghosts. You know, these throw-up images.
Okay, yeah.
Or that we are all in a giant black hole.
Yeah.
They don't actually destroy matter. They just suck it in and move it.
Transmute
like a
it.
Giant wormhole.
Yeah.
That they are just a wormhole at the end of its life.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sucking in everything towards it.
Right. Yeah. Past the, what's that?
Event horizon.
Yeah, the event horizon. What a good term.
It's a good movie. Maybe they go to hell.
Oh, I never seen that movie. I just remember learning about it in like Mrs. Bowden's science class.
Jurassic Park, Neil, what's his name?
Neil deGrasse Tyson?
No.
Oh.
He got knighted.
Sir Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Stop it.
I'm sorry.
Oh gosh, what is his name?
I don't know for sure.
The main actor from the first Jurassic Park.
I don't know. I can't remember. I can see his face. I just cannot picture his name.
I think that was Event Horizon.
Oh, he was in that. I just remember
he's the only one that survived. So like,
oh, okay.
They were testing out basically a new like drive for spaceships.
Yeah.
Humans hadn't left the solar system yet.
Okay.
But so they were trying to do like events, like what Star Wars or Star Trek, like hyperspace and warp and all that.
Yeah, warp drive, warp speed.
And it disappears.
Ludicrous speed.
It disappears for like 17 years.
Okay.
And pops back and it's just like outside of Jupiter.
Hmm.
And nobody's answering. And the dimension they hopped through was accidentally hell.
Oh, wow. Okay. So he was probably traumatized.
Well, no, he was a demon. Oh. Like he was like he'd been like infested with demons. The ship was actually alive. Like underneath the panels and stuff like that was like flesh.
Ugh.
So like the whole 17 years or whatever he was gone, they were just trying like making it so they could get back. Ugh. And they were trying to blow up the drive, which would create a permanent hole.
Back and forth?
Mm-hmm. So they could all pour in.
Oh, they were the demon things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's why they took that long to understand the technology of how to, that humans had accidentally made. Because humans gave up on it when it just disappeared. They're like, oh, well. We just sent that whole crew into nowhere.
Like the Philadelphia experiment.
That happened.
Yeah, that really happened. Look that up if you haven't yet.
So this will be part one. If you guys liked, I mean, this was a listener suggestion. Actually, I think four different people suggested it.
Yeah.
But we still have, let me read some of the titles of stuff we got. How Our Brain Fills in the Blanks is one section we have left.
Okay. Which maybe that's something you guys can do at home, just to your own little experiment. Look up like a blind spot experiment for your eyes so you can just see.
Oh, and then six ways our brains are biologically programmed and primed to believe in the paranormal.
There we go. But you can see, you can just see for yourself, to test yourself how your eyes will lie to you and they'll hide your blind spot. And whichever, if you make, do the test where it's like a little black spot on your piece of paper and you move it closer and further away from your eye. That's the blind spot test. And you can just see it disappear. But your brain fills in the image. So you're constantly, you're not seeing a hole in your vision. It's constantly being filled in. And it's just kind of wild to think about. We're literally every single day, every time you're looking at anything, those blind spots are there, but you cannot perceive them. It's weird to think about, but it's just part of reality.
All right. Well, I've been the great and powerful mystery.
And I've been J Clone 88014.
And we'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on CryptidsOfTheCorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.